The great commission that Jesus gave is recorded in Mark 16. Go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. And this is a grand mission. If I may use Paul's words, he said to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians 9, "For if I preach the gospel, I have nothing to boast of. For necessity is laid upon me. Yes, woe is me if I do not preach the gospel. For if I do this willingly, then I have a reward. But if against my will, I have been entrusted with a stewardship. What is my reward then? That when I preach the gospel, I may present the gospel of Christ without charge, that I may not abuse my authority in the gospel." The gospel is the message, and preachers are the messengers. There are some other terms you might use, but we commonly use that as the men who go forth to proclaim the gospel or evangelize or do the work of an evangelist. You know, there are great preachers in the Bible. I'll concentrate on the New Testament. Jesus, in Matthew 4, he writes that from that time Jesus began to preach and to say, "Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand." The apostles were commissioned to go out. In Matthew 10, he said, "As you go, preach, saying, the kingdom of heaven is at hand." In Mark 3, he appointed 12 that they might be with him and that he might send them out to preach. Acts 10:42, he commanded us to preach to the people and to testify that it is he who was ordained by God to be the judge of the living and the dead. So that was their mission. And then some individuals. Of course, Paul comes to mind immediately. In 1 Timothy 2, Paul wrote that there is one God and one mediator between God and man, the man Christ Jesus, who gave himself a ransom for all to be testified in due time, for which I was appointed a preacher and an apostle. We noted earlier his feeling about that in 1 Corinthians 6. He was compelled to go preach. And Paul is a man who suffered hardships in doing that work. He writes in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, "Are they not Hebrews? So am I. Are they not Israelites? So am I. Are they the seed of Abraham? So am I. Are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I am more. In labors more abundant, in stripes more above measure, in prisons more frequently, in deaths often. From the Jews, 5 times I received 40 stripes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I have been in the deep. In journeys often, in perils of waters, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils of the Gentiles, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren, in weariness and toil, in sleeplessness often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness. Besides the other things, what comes upon me daily, my deep concern for all the churches." So Paul was a preacher. He felt compelled to be a preacher. And yet, in doing that, he lived a very difficult life in many ways. And, of course, we think of Timothy, Paul's student in the Scriptures. In 1 Timothy 4, he said, "I charge you, therefore, before God and the Lord Jesus Christ, who will judge the living and the dead at his appearing, preach the word." And you can think of others. Philip comes to mind, of course, Barnabas, perhaps Silas, many others, and many in the Old Testament who were preachers or proclaimers of the message of God. That's the background of preachers. The purpose of this comment this evening is to remind us of the role and value of preachers and to inform you of several practical matters, I think, having to do with preachers and churches. I want to thank you for being here. You know, Will has expressed his concern that when he gets up, particularly on Sunday evening, to speak, has been pre-announced that no one's going to show up. Well, this is a pretty good crowd, actually, so I'm quite pleased. Curiously, Will is not here, so and he even warned me about that, so we'll speak about that later. You know, another thing that came to mind in preparing this was the number of men who are gospel preachers that have some affiliation with this church or some linkage to this church. It'd be interesting to have a list of those. I have a list of those. I have reviewed the directory and just my thoughts about it from past history and thought this would be interesting to you to consider this. Here are some preachers that we have some kind of contact with, besides men who just come here and speak occasionally. Will Dilbeck and Greg Chandler, our current preachers. Robert Hendricks, Morris Norman, Grant Caldwell, Alan Dvorak, former preachers here who are still living. Dan Cheney, Aaron Beer, Jonathan Dvorak, Ronald Stringer, Joshua Ellis, former preachers and training program here. And then to go to families, and I'll start with mine, if you'll pardon me. Eugene Britnell, father of me and Keith. And he has a brother who preaches, Charlie Britnell. Our son-in-law is Norm Webb, Jr. Norm Webb, Sr. preaches, as does Norm Jr.'s brother, Wes, down in Florida, Panhandle, Florida. And Norm Sr.'s father was a preacher, Ellis Webb, preached for many years up in the Ohio area primarily. Ed Brand, that's Mike's father. Howard Dunaway, David's father. Tommy Hagwood, Kenny's uncle. Jared Hagen, the McCowan's son-in-law. David Maravilla, Connie's son. Rick Lanning, Rick is a brother-in-law to Bob's son. Paul Williams, Steve's father, and Joel is preaching now in South Africa with Paul. Mark White is the brother-in-law of Joy Hopper. Bobby Ogles is Will's grandfather, Mark's father. Tom Thrasher, which is Tommy's father. David Dodd, I think David is still preaching or has been preaching. It's Deborah Sims' brother. Leon Stancliffe is Sherry Hood's father. He lives in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. I think Larry Vincent preaches or has preached on occasion. I'm not sure what to do about the Duncan family. Some of Curtis and Billy preach from time to time, I think. And then there's Jerry Cook. It's Shirley's husband, who's now deceased, of course. Olin Romine, Maurice's father, preached. Corey McElyea's grandfather was a preacher occasionally. And the grandfather of Heather Way and Courtney Wilson was a gospel preacher, lived in Fayetteville and recently died. All those have ties to this church. In addition to men who just come and visit with us from time to time, these are connections to the church. That's a lot of men. And then there's some interesting extended families of preachers. Because of our connection, two or three come to mind. One would be the Hall family. Brother Gardner Hall, now deceased, of course, but his two sons, Sewell and Bill, and they preach here from time to time. Sister Perkins is here this evening. They're his daughter, their sister, and then her family, Frank and Greg, are preachers. But the Halls have and Gardner Hall, the younger Gardner Hall, preaches, all in one family. There was a family with roots in Alabama named the Andrews Brothers. There were six of them. And some of you who are older might remember them. They're all gone now. But they preached in this area, extended family, and some of their children, some of their sons are preachers. And then there's the Caldwells, C.G. Caldwell Sr., who probably none of us knew. C.G. Caldwell Jr., has been here on occasion to visit with his son, C.G. Grant Caldwell. Another son is C.G. Caldwell III, which we normally call Collie. And another son, Stan Caldwell, is a gospel preacher. And to continue the tradition, Jonathan Caldwell, Grant's youngest son, is now preaching out in Yuma, Arizona. And you can think of others. I may have missed some here, and if I have, I apologize for that. But it gives you an idea about the importance, I think, that our brethren place on preaching and the connections we have with preachers. You know, today, the common practice is for each church to secure a man to work with them as a preacher. And sometimes they can't afford a full-time man. They will get someone who will either do it at no cost or at low cost, and he can supplement his income from other sources. Sometimes more than one is needed. We have discussed that need here in the last 4 or 5 years. But that's the common practice. It's to secure a man and usually provide for his support to come and preach for each church. This has not always been the case in our country, and that was the occasion of what's known as the circuit riders, where they have men who would go and preach from place to place, maybe once a month, around the circuit, because none of them had regular full-time preachers. And now we do have, although I think the need is still greater for men that beyond what we now have. Their primary work is the proclamation of the gospel. That's why they exist, why they're designated to do that. Sometimes they're called on to do more than that. We should be careful not to burden them with more than they can do or ought to do. And we shouldn't place on them more than they really have authority to do and should be doing. Elders sometimes preachers do the work of elders, basically, in small churches especially. And sometimes elders just abdicate their work to preachers because it's easier to do. If the preacher will do it, then I don't have to. And so you see a lot of times preachers acting in the role of elders beyond just instruction. And I think that's unfortunate, but sometimes it happens. And sometimes we seem to say or think because they can, then they should. And that gets elders and preachers involved in all kinds of activities in the church just because they have some capabilities. You know, there's a mock job application you see floating around. I don't have a copy with me, but it has to do with searching for a man who is a young man but many years of experience, a man who is wise with money but can live on nothing, a man who has just the right family and just the right wife and just the right degree, and he has to endure all the things that Paul endured. It's a hard position to find. Our society has peculiar views about preachers. And over the years and even centuries, most religious groups have established in some form a clergy. That word comes from kleros, a Greek word in the New Testament, used one time, referring to the people of God. It refers to all of us as that it applies to all of us. And it was not a special class of people. Although our society generally considers preachers a special class and sometimes even elevates them to the clergy. You'll see little bumper stickers with clergy on it or something like that. That's unfortunate because it conveys upon preachers something that is different, that is not true of them. But that's most of society. And it puts unreasonable expectations on preachers and their families. How many here know what a PK is? I do. I'll bet Mike does and a bunch of others. That's short for preacher kid. If you're a PK, you know it because you've heard it. And why do they use that term? Well, it's some kind of expectations for preacher's kids that seem to be different from ordinary children. Implication is they're not quite ordinary, are for normal children, because these are abnormal children. But it's just a vision or a perception that people have of preachers and their families, and I think somewhat unfair. Preachers are hard to classify, and I'll use example of that is the preachers in government. Many years ago, a lot of people thought that preachers didn't pay taxes. Yes, they pay taxes. However, there are some considerations for preachers in paying taxes. They pay taxes in the same scale or rates and so forth as the rest of it, but they have some considerations that are useful. And they may avail themselves of some advantages that a lot of people don't have and therefore reduce their taxes. a preacher or a minister can, for example, declare a housing allowance. And this has to be declared ahead of the time it's incurred. And typically we, the elders here, sign paper for the preacher at the beginning of the year that says he has so much allocated of his salary for housing allowance. And then he can deduct that. He can only deduct what he really spent. He can't just claim a number and use it. But he can deduct that from his taxes. That's a deductible expense. That helps a lot because it takes a lot of expense out of his a taxable income. And, of course, anything that falls in the category of business expenses that he has to incur himself, he can deduct those things like most people can. So there are some advantages, but he pays taxes like everybody else. But to show you again how difficult this is, preachers have a dual classification with the government. And I think this is the only group that is like this. There may be others that I don't know about, but for IRS purposes, for federal income tax purposes, preachers are employees for taxing purposes. However, for Social Security purposes, preachers are self-employed, or they're independent contractors. Now, a word of explanation about the difference in that. Employees, typically, their time is given to their employer in exchange for salary, of course. The employer sets the time that they'll work, the hours of work, the place of work, the job they'll do, the materials they'll use, they provide all that, and they're an employee. An independent contractor typically sets his own time, he provides his own tools, he just does the job and charges for it on a job basis. So in our system, for tax purposes, preachers are employees. For Social Security purposes, they are self-employed or independent contractors. And that creates some difficulties from time to time. If you don't understand that, realize it. Preachers can opt out of the Social Security system. They can elect not to be under that program. And again, to my knowledge, they're the only people that can do that. But if they can choose not to be in that program, and if they do, there's some regulations, of course, there's regulations on everything, regulations on that, but they may choose to do that. If so, they have to provide their own retirement program if they want to have a retirement program. Another difficulty in the government, with the government in particular, and sometimes other people, is the concept of ordination. Most religious groups have something very formal to designate who is a minister or in the clergy, let me use the word, in that particular group. They are ordained some way. And what that would require would be finish a course of study at some approved school. They would have some experience, maybe requirement on it. And then they would be designated as a preacher by some governing group and that says, you are a preacher and we recognize you as such. Our brotherhood doesn't do that. We still can have the benefits of having an ordained preacher for tax purposes and so forth. But typically, that recognition comes from the fact of his work and his association with a particular church that would in fact certify him to be, yes, we employ this man, he's doing his work for us, and it's the same as anyone would expect of an ordained preacher. But that's different from us, between us and other people, other groups. Let me make a couple of comments about compensation for preachers. Churches set salaries for preachers, and typically preachers can begin their career, let me use the term, and as they go along, they can increase their salaries as they get more experience and maybe move from smaller churches to bigger churches, maybe as their family grows and their needs are greater. But churches set their salaries. You always need to be careful, if you know preachers' salaries, what they are, about jumping to conclusions about those numbers. Because if for the most of us who work with companies, if you ask what the salary is, we'll give you a figure. But that figure will not include fringe benefits. That's just the figure that is in the top line of the paycheck. It's the amount you're given from which deductions begin for taxes and so forth, the taxable amounts. And fringe benefits for most companies, especially in the Huntsville area, may be another 20 or 30% above what the stated salary is. For preachers, most of the time, whatever they are presented with as a salary is total compensation. That's everything. So they have to provide their own health insurance out of that. They have to provide their own retirement program out of that. If they're in the Social Security, they have to pay that out of that, and that's 15% because they pay both parts of it. Even if an employee pays it, typically we pay half of that, and the company pays half of it, but for a preacher, it'd be 15%. So it's a different situation. You need to understand what it is. And what that means is that preachers have to exercise better self-discipline than most of us do, and maybe most of us even can. Regrettably, sometimes you see preachers nearing retirement that are not ready for retirement financially. And the problem is they've been grappling with this for years and haven't been able to accumulate enough investments or save enough money for a good retirement program. And they depend on Social Security if they're in it or some other program. It's good in compensation and salary to be competitive with other professions. I don't think we intend necessarily to pay for performance with preachers because they have a very special role in churches and role in the kingdom. At the same time, people who are talented merit recognition of that talent, and it's appropriate to pay them in some way competitive with other professions of the same sort. And it's good to ensure, I think, that preachers have appropriate benefits for the care of their family. Sometimes the cost of housing is included in the salary. Sometimes it isn't. Many years ago, it seemed to be more common for churches to provide a dwelling or a house for a preacher to live in, and that would be in addition to his stated salary. There's pros and cons about that. It certainly provides a place to have a preacher to dwell while he works with you. On the other hand, he never accumulates anything in terms of equity in a house. He's kind of buying the house for the church in a peculiar way over the years. But now, most of the time, I think that's shifted and for the better for churches to provide elders, provide preachers with enough funds to buy their own houses and build up some equity as time goes on. And believe it or not, they can't work all the time. So it's appropriate that they, like other people, have some vacation time or time set aside for that. There is also some peculiarities in the compensation for what we call missionaries, people who are preaching elsewhere, and particularly in some other country, in our minds at least. Missionaries' compensation is usually a reasonable amount, but it's collected from a number of churches. We've had several here suggest in the past few years that we try to focus our funds for missionaries on a man or two men or three men. And we make attempts to do that, to put more funds in fewer baskets, I guess, to put it that way, to put more funds in fewer men. And that's a good thing to do because it gets us more involved with them. We understand their needs more. We work better with them. The problem is, this is kind of a pragmatic problem, that hardly anyone ever comes to you and says, I'm going to preach the gospel in Italy, and I need $70,000 a year to go do that. They come to you and they say, I'm going to preach the gospel in Italy. I've raised 3/4 of my support, and I just need $500 a month. So that's how we get the system we have now, where a lot of churches provide funds for partial support for so many people. It's probably better to move to the other way if we can, but it's sort of a challenge to do it pragmatically. But these men have a constant effort to keep things going because they'll get their work going, get their funds in place, and then someone will drop offline, and they have to go out and renew those connections and seek other funds. And they have a special challenge because they live under two sets of national laws. Typically, if you live overseas for a prolonged period of time, even if you're still a U.S. citizen, you wind up having to be a U.S. citizen and live under other laws also because of where you are. So it's a real challenge for those men. Let me pose a couple of questions. The first one is, what can a preacher do for you? What can a preacher do for you? Well, he can teach you. He usually has a greater width and depth of biblical knowledge than most of us have because he spent more time working on that. And he has spent more time teaching classes. And teaching classes is the best way to learn the material because you've got to go dig a little deeper than what you have to cover in class and prepare yourself for the class. So we can learn from them. They usually have better, more experience with applications of the Scripture because they've seen it in action and in various circumstances that we haven't seen. Something else he can do for you, he can teach you, and what that means is you need to learn to listen. That would seem to be axiomatic, I guess, anybody can do that, but you don't do that carefully and effectively, naturally. We let things kind of fly over our heads because we have so much. I work at my desk listening to television a lot, which means probably I don't really get the news on television or I don't really get what I'm working on my desk because it's so much information. And we get to be that way sometimes, I think, in our church services. There's so much that we lapse and let our minds go dead. Let me suggest a challenge to you. As you're listening to gospel preachers from time to time, do this at least mentally. You might want to get a little notebook and do it on paper. As you listen to a lesson, pick out one point that is significant to you. Maybe two or three points. Most sermons come in 3 points. But pick out one point that's significant to you. And remember that. Write it down. Think about it. You say, that's not much out of a sermon, a 45-minute sermon. No, it isn't much. But can you name one point out of the first sermon of this year? Probably not. It was good, but we let it get away. Now, I have a suggestion, because this morning I have a good point. I thought Greg's illustration of the rescue of the miners in Pennsylvania and dropping down the cart to them, and then they have an option about whether to get in that cart or not, I thought that was an excellent illustration. And, of course, his point was, how can God help us escape from the problems we have in life? We're offered some opportunities that we don't always take. Those miners took their opportunity. So that's my point for this morning. You can think of your own point. And don't tell me if you don't have a point for this lesson here, because it'd be discouraging. A preacher can be a co-worker with you. He's like we are. He has the same challenges in life and the same challenges in the kingdom. He might have more public opportunities, maybe even more private opportunities, but he can be a co-worker because of our common interest. And we have similar responsibilities to spread the gospel. And I think preachers can inspire us. They can raise us up a little bit. The preachers that I like best are men who can say something to me that makes me a better person when I walk out the door than I was when I walked in the door. He's pointed out something that's useful to me in my life. A lot of guys like that, and I appreciate listening to them. But they can inspire us by their dedication to the work they're doing, by their focus on Bible matters. You know, we have a lot of stories to tell. There's lots of stories in the Bible about things that happen like us, around us every day. And if you know about those things and think about them, those are stories you'll think about. And they can inspire us by their sacrifice. Sometimes preachers choose to be preachers when they can make a lot more money doing something else. because of the talent they've got and the background they've got and the experience they've got. Or they choose to be a preacher and sacrifice when they could do something else with a lot less trouble. It's work to be a preacher, and it's problems. And so that sacrificial attitude may be useful to us or inspirational to us. Let me turn this around and pose the question, what can you do for preachers? Well, I think recognize, just as we're talking about, recognize the value of their work. Understand what they're doing and appreciate it. Help them whenever you can. In 2 Kings 4, there's a little snippet of a story, but it says so much about the people involved. It happened one day that Elisha went to Shunem, where there was a notable woman, and she persuaded him to eat some food. So it was, as often as he passed by, he would turn in there to eat some food. And she said to her husband, "Look now, I know that this is a holy man of God who passes by us regularly. Please, let us make a small upper room on the wall. Let us put a bed for him there, and a table, and a chair, and a lampstand. So it will be, whenever he comes to us, he can turn in there." You know how thoughtful that is? They saw Elisha coming and going and knew he needed a lodging place. And so her idea was, we'll just make one for him. We'll give him a place to stay when he comes through here. And so they did. Elisha rewarded her for that effort in subsequent events. We can do that. We can provide a place for preachers who are traveling or preachers who come and visit with us. Just in the last couple of weeks, the Jordans let their little room with a table and a chair and a lampstand, let it be used by a visiting preacher. We can do that. We need to think ahead about those things, though, and prepare to meet the needs that arise. We can be friendly with them. You say, well, who wouldn't be friendly to a preacher? Well, lots of folks won't be friendly to a preacher. They feel kind of nervous about meeting preachers because he's a preacher and I'm just a member. He has the same problems that all the rest of us have. He faces the same challenges in daily life that all the rest of us do. And he doesn't know us as well as we know us. So we need not feel he's something special because of that. So talk to them. There was a book published 3 or 4 years ago by Ann Coulter, and the title of the book, and you know Ann Coulter is a conservative, ultra-conservative political commentator. The title of her book was How to Talk to a Liberal, If You Must. Well, let me give you a couple of suggestions about how to talk to a preacher, if you must. Be friendly. Ask questions. You can draw people out by asking questions. Where have you lived before? What work do you do? Have you ever traveled in foreign countries, worked with the churches? What kind of churches were those? How do the people manage over there? What's the most influential person you've ever met? Which preacher do you admire? You know, who's your mentor? Where are you working now? How's the church doing? Are you an Auburn fan or an Alabama fan? There's all kinds of questions you can ask folks. And if he's a grandfather, you've got him. Just ask about the grandkids and let him go. So be friendly with them. Make some conversation with them. At the same time, give them some space. They do have the right to privacy for their family and for their marriage. Their marriage is not for you to explore or exploit or pick apart. So give them some appropriate space, but be friendly with them. You can help them specifically with their work. We try to encourage this. Suggest topics for sermons. One of the most difficult challenges, I think, to preaching is what shall I preach about today or tomorrow? And why would I choose that topic? Once you have that choice made for whatever reason, then you have a little mission here. You can go work on that and develop your lesson. Well, you can help him make those decisions. If we're facing some difficulties in life, ask for a sermon tailored to that. If something we don't understand in the Scriptures, ask for a sermon tailored to that. In the past year, we've had Q&A sessions where you just ask a question and get an answer back. That gives a preacher some insight into what is of interest to you and what will help you the most. So you can help that way. But they want to know what's needed. And you need to recognize, at the same time, when preachers speak, they present their own views about things. I know sometimes we assume that, for example, everything that comes from this pulpit is the elder's position on that matter. It might not be. We have different views about things. Certainly there are many things we have common views about. That's why we're here and doing what we do together. But there are many other things that we have different views about. So think about that and realize that when he presents his views, they're his views. And frequently you'll hear a preacher give you two or three views on a matter because he realizes that it's either controversial or it's something not well understood, and he'll provide you with the thoughts about these things among our brotherhood and usually tell you which his view is. You can show appreciation for the work that they do. And you do that by saying thanks. It's a more heartfelt thanks if you will tell them what you're thanking them for. You know, thanks for that lesson on suffering. I needed that. Thanks for explaining that verse. I've always wondered about that. That helps me. So thank them for the work they do. And I think a written note occasionally is especially helpful. It's nice to go to the mailbox and get something that gives you courage and hope and appreciation for your time spent. Don't expect them to do your work. And the elders should never expect a preacher to do their work. That's how elders abdicate their position. So don't expect preachers to do your work. If you have a role in the church here, do that. Don't expect them to be perfect. They're not perfect. If you think they are, you can consult with their wife, and she will explain why they're not perfect. But they're not perfect, and realize that. And limit your demands on their time. A man who comes to work at this church, for example, has 200 people, 200 Christians that he has some interest in. But he can't talk to each one of you every week. Just too many to go around. So limit your time. Even though preachers are always on call, you don't always have to call them. So handle your affairs as well as you can, but then use them when you need to. We have suggested, and it's been done in the past, to have the preacher here have office hours. We don't expect it to be 40 hours a week like a normal office would be, because he has other duties. But we ask the preachers who come here to post or announce some office hours. And usually it's 2 or 3 hours in the morning. And that's the time that we try to set aside. If you want to come talk to him personally or call him, you know where he'll be and that he's available for consultation. So use those hours as available. Let me turn to another question now. I have a follow-up comment on this in just a moment. What should you expect in our next preacher? We are in a transition phase right now. Well, certainly you would expect him to be dedicated to his work. That's why we would secure his services. And you expect him, you know he's going to be moving his family. And so there's some considerations in helping him make that transition. But let me tell you what I can guarantee about the next preacher. There'll be some things that he will do better than the last preacher. There will be some things that he won't do as well as the last preacher. I'll guarantee both of those things. And the reason is, they're different people. They have different backgrounds, different experiences in life. They may have different native capabilities. They may have different personalities. They're just different people. And so it behooves us to work in working with a man to recognize that and then make the most of his strong points and work with him to make his service most, as valuable to us as it possibly can. So it'll be different. This lesson was originally planned for December, because I knew then it would be in the transition. But I put it off and just got to it now. And today is the day we've announced a new preacher here. So I apologize for that. I mentioned that because these comments are not intended nor tailored to any particular name. This is about preachers and churches. And I had no particular name in mind at the time. I presented this lesson probably 15 years ago, and it was in the old building. And I don't know, 4 or 5 people maybe, they thought it was good. And I considered that a mandate to do it again. So this is the occasion for this talk. And I'd planned to do this before selection was made. Let me make a comment about our recent selection. We considered a number of men that we thought were both qualified and were a good match to this church. There are lots of men that I think are fully qualified to be gospel preachers, but maybe not good fits for this church. We tried to find someone we thought would do well here. We actually contacted several men to ascertain availability and interest on their part. You're aware, of course, that for 3 or 4 years we had been discussing having 2 preachers here. Because of that, we had actually contacted 2 or 3 guys, had a little bit to go on to start with. Those are good men. They didn't want to leave where they were for various reasons. So it took us a little bit longer than we thought it would in the beginning. But Frank Walton was on our list from the beginning. We'd had some previous contact with Frank, and we began discussions with him now, I guess, 2 months or maybe 3 months ago, at least 2 months ago, about the work here, about his background, about his interest in the work here. And those discussions and visits finally brought us to an agreement and commitment to do this work. Frank is a good man, and we think he's a good match to this church. He has extensive experience. We've mentioned that to you before. He's 46 years old. We think good experience and valuable for us. And he's proven to be an asset to churches where he's been before. So we're very pleased he's agreed to come here. We're happy with that selection. We think he'll be very effective in the work here. And let each one of us help him in the transition to this church and the mutual work we have ahead of us. The primary work of preachers is to teach the gospel. The primary duty of all of us is to hear the message of God and do it. And we can see this in practice in Acts 2, verse 14. Luke says that Peter, standing up with the 11, raised his voice and said to them, "Men of Judea and all who dwell in Jerusalem, let this be known to you and heed my words." And then he outlined the history of the Jews leading up to the life of Jesus and his sacrifice. And in verse 40, he said, with many other words he testified and exhorted them. Then those who gladly received his word were baptized. And that day about 3,000 souls were added to them. So there's a man preaching the gospel and people who gladly received the word, accepting the gospel and ordering their lives in that way. And the question I have for you now then is, have you received the word gladly? We'd love to help assist you in your obedience to the gospel and invite you to make that known while we stand and sing.